The Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, Mondays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? It's the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, with guests and callers seeking the truth about psychiatry and psychotherapy, and how you can make the most of your own life, right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bragan. Welcome to the most interesting avant-garde, cutting-edge program in the field of psychology, mental health, psychiatry, and the whole field. There's nothing like this show. Every week, you hear things that you're just not going to learn in the classroom, things that you usually learn painfully in your clinical practice or as a patient. You learn these things painfully that we're talking about. And also the positive aspects, you won't necessarily hear about them in your training or as a client, a patient, somebody in the outer world there, in that great big world of people who seek services of people like myself. You won't know about the kinds of things you're going to hear on this show. I don't think there's anything like this in the world. And every week, it's become my habit to have an exciting guest, an interesting guest. And today, I'm going to, in a few minutes, maybe 5 or 6 minutes, bring you into contact with one of the most interesting guests that you can imagine. She's so interesting, in fact, that you're just going to stand up and say, what in the world is this all about? What is this all about? Before I go there, though, to my guest, a couple of things I want to tell you about, remind you about. First, the New York Times on Sunday had an article entitled, FDA is Studying the Risk of Electroshock Devices. Now, the situation at the FDA is absolutely appalling. They have allowed electroshock to go on unimpeded without ever being tested for risk or safety. A few years ago, they made a foray into wanting to test it, and the American Psychiatric Association raised a hue and cry, complained, shouted, wrote documents that are just full of falsehoods. I talk about these documents, I talk about these issues in my book, Brain Disabling Treatments in Psychiatry, this second edition, document what I'm talking about now. And so the FDA caved in and got ready to decide that these devices were probably safe, maybe safe, and then they just said, forget it. We're not even going to deal with the issue. Now, prodded by the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, the FDA is again looking at ECT, electroshock treatment, which, by the way, is giving you enough voltage to your brain to damage the brain sufficiently to put you into a grand mal seizure. And that's not easy. The brain doesn't like it. The brain does not like being driven into a grand mal seizure. And we know from animal studies that it causes brain damage. We know from human studies it causes long-term memory and cognitive deficits. And when you get long-term memory and cognitive deficits, that's called dementia. We know this is a horrifically damaging treatment. We also know there's no controlled clinical studies that show it's effective. It's all hearsay, life-saving, and, you know, wonderful, say the doctors, and very few patients. So given this situation, the FDA is on the verge now of declaring ECT to not need testing for safety. Can you believe that? They're planning to put it in the same category as syringes and surgical drills that have been used forever and don't need new testing. So your risk from ECT is apparently the same as getting a shot at the doctor's office, disregarding what's in the syringe, just the needle. This is how bad it is out there. That's how much power biological psychiatry has over federal agencies and over the whole mental health field. I hope more and more people will be writing about this, shouting about this, Googling it on online and getting to the FDA about it. You can find the FDA by Googling them online. So that's one thing I wanted to talk about with you a little bit today. By the way, shock docs are saying that if they have to do this testing, they'll go out of business. They can't afford to do the FDA testing. Since when has that been a defense? Since when has any manufacturer or drug company dared to say, you can't make me test this or I won't be able to put the product on the market? Then don't put it on the market. Now, I'm quoted in this article, which is somewhat of a recent breakthrough. I used to get quoted all the time in the New York Times, but then the powers that be, as always happens, exerted some influence. It's been a while since I've been in the Times, though I've been in it dozens probably of times over the years. And it's a pretty good, explains my viewpoint, but it kind of dismisses it a little bit, saying I think that patients would be better off with a pet in conversation. Of course, I didn't quite say that. I said that what elderly people getting shock treatment need, we were talking about elderly people, is human companionship. Human companionship and even a pet and anything you can do to help them out, to help them have a human, loving, caring setting in which to live. And we have a lot of stuff on that, and you'll be seeing more on our websites about this. And finally, I want to mention to you, before getting to my really interesting and unusual guest, about our conference. I really want to urge you, if you enjoy this show, you're going to go wild over our conference. I'll be there. You'll be able to talk to me and say, I got this I want to tell you, and this I want to talk to you about. And you're going to hear me talk, and you're going to hear people from all over the world, from Australia and Colombia, all over the world. And you're going to meet people from all over the world. You'll meet mental health professionals from third world countries, from Asia, from all over the world. And the conference, again, is April 10, 11, and 12. I mean, 8, 9, and 10. My wife is listening. She's going, oh, my God. It's 8, 9, and 10, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of April. And it's going to be a wonderful conference. You can find out all you need to know about signing up at empathictherapy.org, empathictherapy.org. And in a day or so, we're going to have up, maybe tonight even, I want you to be looking on empathictherapy.org for guidelines for empathic therapy. You want to know the extreme opposite of electroshock treatment? It's empathic therapy. And by empathic therapy, I'm talking about all of the good therapies under one rubric, and that's empathic therapy. And we've worked out the 15 guidelines of empathic therapy with a group of my wonderful advisory council members on the Center for the Study of Empathic Therapy. So stay in touch with us. Go to empathictherapy.org. We should have the guidelines up tonight or tomorrow. Now, with that preamble about the good and the bad in psychiatry and mental health, I come to my guest. Her name is Grace Sweet. And one of the things I want to ask Grace is, did you create that name or were you given it? Grace Sweet. Now, hi. What Grace does is yoga laughter therapy. She goes into mental health settings and she does yoga laughter. She's the originator of laughter yoga and the founder of Laughter Yoga International.
Oh, my God.
Now, I've never met Grace Sweet. I don't know if she's coming to my conference, our conference, but I want to meet her. So are you there, Grace?
Yes, I am.
Well, Grace, tell the world about what you do and how you do it. Take about 3 or 4 or 5 minutes and just introduce us to you.
Hello, world. Well, as much as I would love to take the credit that you just gave me, Dr. Bregan, unfortunately, I can't. I am not the originator of laughter yoga. nor Laughter Yoga International. That is Dr. Madan Kataria from Mumbai, India.
I see where I've misread the printout. Well, go ahead, and I'm glad to give the doctor from India credit. Go ahead.
Yeah. What I've done is I became a leader, and then I became a teacher. There's two levels. And a leader is someone who leads groups, and a teacher is someone who teaches people to lead laughter yoga groups as well as to coach laughter yoga one-to-one. So I became a teacher, and I had this idea that, before I had the idea, I was going around and doing nonprofit organizations, that is, I was giving laughter groups, laughter sessions for nonprofit organizations, battered women, cancer society, this type of thing. And someone introduced me to mental health, and I went and I checked it out, one of the wellness centers, and they invited me immediately to start a laughter group there. So I did, and it got in the media, the local media, and it was really for the opening of the center, and that's why it didn't take off there, because there were no clients yet.
Okay.
It was just opening. But as I hung out around there, I began to realize that this wasn't just for the clients. This was for the clinicians, the people that, not just clinicians, but what they call peer specialists that work with the clients in mental health. So I started doing workshops at conferences. And from there, I developed a 3-day training, and I call it Laughter Bridges Leader Certification Training. And I have done that in a couple of spots nationally and in my state, California.
Now, where do you help people? Where do you go? I see that you do one-on-one laughter yoga and coaching, and you lead a laughter yoga group or groups. Give me an example of something you've done recently so we can really get what you're doing.
Okay. Well, the most recent thing I did was I went to Arkansas, and I went to the state conference in Arkansas. I was invited to present there. I have more than laughter in my little bag of tricks. The name of my organization is Average Miracles, the Average Miracles Foundation, actually, and laughter is the mainstay, the main thing I do. But I also do a workshop and training on healing trauma that I've used on myself. I specialize in self-directed.
I want you to tell me what you do. You go in there and you get people laughing, and how do you do it, and what kind of folks? Give me a real example.
All right. Well, I have a 3-day training. Well, first thing I do is I go in and I do a workshop at a conference, any said conference. And the conference...
What do you do in your workshop?
People attend, and the first thing I do is a laughter session where we simulate laughter exercises. We simulate laughter to generate genuine laughter. And within...
You make believe you're laughing, and that kind of gets people going.
Absolutely right.
Good.
And
okay.
The silliness and the of it, when people forget who they think they are, they're very funny. And so they trigger laughter in each other. And so that's how that happens. So they laugh and have a wonderful time. And then we sit down and we talk about why and how. And I do a PowerPoint presentation. So for about two-thirds, depends on the length of the conference session, I do about a half to a third of laughter session, and then we sit down and we talk. So that's
now,
how it happens.
Suppose you're invited into a mental hospital, like I think you've been doing, and you go on the ward?
No, I don't go into mental hospitals. I go to behavioral health facilities.
What are those?
Mental health
clinics. Outpatient, you mean?
Not really hospitals, but actually sometimes the administrative offices, wherever they find a space. I'm invited to people
who are interested.
So you're mostly
working with staff rather than with the clients?
Yeah, well, actually a mixture of both.
Okay. Now, when you start, you get folks laughing. Where does yoga fit in?
The yoga part of it is breathing and stretching. And another part of it, so that's all mixed together to create laughter yoga. The yoga part of laughter, though, is connected to the diaphragm. The diaphragm is connected to the parasympathetic nervous system. And the parasympathetic nervous system is a calm down, kind of put the brakes on, relax kind of feeling. And so after a laughter session, people are really calm and centered, and they have epiphanies and insights. It's a wonderful time. So that's why I teach laughter as a practice.
Now, when you're doing this, are you actually ever trying to specifically help people with their emotional problems? Somebody who's depressed, somebody who's anxious, somebody who's withdrawn from reality? Or are you pretty much taking folks who are out there functioning and trying to help them get more in touch with themselves and with joy, happiness, and things like that?
Yeah, more the latter. The people who are not in touch with reality will not like this. Because it is challenging to the ego. Because you do have to set your ego on a shelf somewhere and be silly and goofy a little bit and let go of who you think you are. So lots of clinicians and lots of people who are in recovery from mental health are capable of that, and they absolutely love it when they let go to it and find out what it is. It's an adventure.
Have you worked at all with survivor groups, people who have been through psychiatry and are looking for something different?
Survivor groups, peers directly, you mean?
Yeah, there's a whole group that you might appeal to a great deal. They tend to call themselves psychiatric survivors. You can Google them and find them all over. And
well, that's
we
who
have
I
some
am.
Active in our organization.
I'm a psychiatric survivor.
Yeah, they're
sure.
People who have been through the mental health system and suffered from it, and they're looking for ways to overcome what's been done to them, hopefully to get out of being victims and to really triumph. I think that your laughter sessions and whatever else you're bringing could do a lot to get people past being victims and past their self-involvement and what you would probably call their ego and just much more into relating to the universe. I mean, does that happen?
That is actually the whole point. That is what directed care is in the consumer survivor movement. That is where, by the way, I am. I work.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I can't work with the people who are not in touch with reality, though their own reality. You have to at least, you know, be a somewhat grounded in order to get it. So, yes, exactly what you're saying is true. It does bring them around to realizing that they can help themselves, and this is one very, very good way. I call it self-directed care. That's what mental health calls itself in the system. They call it self-directed care. And so I laugh very often just on my own, on the telephone, with groups on the telephone, with friends on the phone. In the car alone, I'll do 10 to 15 minutes of laughter, and it starts the endorphins and the chemical, good chemistry going through your blood and to your brain, and you start to feel good. And that's the whole point. Positive experiences heal. That's what you're about, Dr. Bregan, as far as I understand.
Well, I'm totally with you. Gosh, remember the book? It was a very bestseller about the fellow who used laughter to heal a very serious illness.
Dr. Norman Cousins?
Yes, yes. And what was he struggling with?
It was
Do you remember? Was it?
Well, I don't remember the name of the disease, but it was something to do with his nervous system. And actually,
yeah.
I have a problem with my nervous system also. I have an autoimmune disorder, and I cope with that, and laughter helps a great deal. And he used something called conditional laughter. He laughed at Laurel and Hardy and funny movies and anything that he could get that he felt was funny. Laughter yoga is laughing for absolutely no reason. You actually use laughter as a practice, as a therapeutic practice.
What happens when you try to tell a psychiatrist about this other than me?
Well, I only know of one psychiatrist that is actually on my website that is recommending it for his client who I trained. She was one of my fellow pupils in one of the trainings. So I haven't had that experience where I've told a psychiatrist directly about it. Usually they don't take it too seriously, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah.
Because, after all, it's laughter. But when we start taking it seriously is when the good experience of it and the healing effects of it start to begin right there.
Now, you consider yourself a former consumer of psychiatry or a survivor of psychiatry, Grace?
I do, yes. I do.
And I don't know if you want to talk about that at all, but tell me what, you know, I started out this show talking about what I believe is a crime against humanity, electroshock treatment. Do you have thoughts about conventional psychiatry and biological psychiatry, medication, hospitals that you'd like to share? This is a place you can talk about that.
Oh, yes, sir, I do. My father was a victim of electroshock therapy. And all I know, I was only four. It was in 1950. And all I know is that he was committed, and he came back, and he, as I grew up, I just noticed a difference, that he became more withdrawn, more withdrawn, more withdrawn as the years went by. But because of that experience, and it happened through a system, it was Bellevue State, I guess it's State Hospital in New York.
No, Bellevue is a city hospital, a notorious shock mill.
Yeah,
in New
that's
York
where he
City,
was.
Where some very,
I'm
very
from New York, actually,
notorious
originally.
Psychiatrists were.
Staten Island. Anyway, I never, ever, I knew that I had a mental illness. I never compared myself with anyone else because I wasn't involved in the system, and that's exactly why. Because that happened to my father, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. And the interesting thing right now is that I'm working in it. That's something to laugh about.
Well, and you laugh enough and you're going to doubt whether you ever had a, quote, mental illness, I hope, and look at it in a different terms, more spiritual, psychological terms.
Yes.
Than that concept of mental illness.
Well,
now,
I never really bought
okay.
it like the people who have been convinced by the system have bought it. And that's pretty much what Average Miracle Foundation is about. It's about the way you think, and it's about more than just laughter, but laughter is the most powerful component.
Yes, tell me about the more than laughter. Once you've got, by the way, I was thinking that maybe you and I could experiment with laughing on air, but then I just heard my wife over my shoulder in my imagination saying, I don't think so, honey. So I'm not going to do any laughter therapy with you today, but it certainly sounds inviting. It sounds like it would be a relief. It sounds like it would sort of just let a lot of things go and then let somebody start thinking about other things. Now, give us some examples of, like, after you've done with getting folks to laugh spontaneously, just laugh about nothing, let go, maybe blow off charge from their nervous system or some other metaphor for that. Now, once you've done that, then what happens in some of your really wonderful experiences?
Well, actually, you hit the nail on the head. Laughter is a conduit for emotion. And one of the exercises that I always do in the laughter session when I begin my workshops at conferences or the trainings is I do something called gibberish. And gibberish, of course, is nonsense talking. So we start off to having a gibberish conversation. And people talk gibberish to each other, nonsense. They make up words. And they think it's so hilarious that within 10 seconds they're laughing hysterically. Then we have a few minutes of a minute of that. Then we go to argument laughter. And then they get to tell each other off in laughter. And they love it. They absolutely love it. Then we have a minute or so of that. And then, and of course, you know, in a group, it's a random. They go one to another. They do 2 seconds with this person and 3 seconds with the next and so on. So anyway, after the argument laughter, then we go to forgiveness laughter. And we just, you know, say we're sorry in laughter. We didn't mean to be angry, and then when that's over...
So you're saying those things, but you're laughing at the same time?
You're not saying anything. You're saying it with ha-ha, hee-hee-ho-ho, whatever. You're not
saying
anything.
Okay, but the intention that's been declared ahead of the laughter is this is forgiveness laughter.
It's forgiveness
laughter. So you kind of get into thinking of it that way while you're doing it.
But it's all in gibberish, don't forget. It's make-believe
words. I got that, yeah. But you must be saying that we're going to do some forgiveness laughter now, or it wouldn't be forgiveness laughter, right?
Exactly. I give direction in a session prior to each exercise.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay, so now carry me forward. We're done laughing, and then what kind of things are people likely to communicate?
Oh, just all sorts of releases and how they realized what they did to their, you know, their relationship with their mother, and just on and on, all sorts of epiphanies happen. People get insights that they didn't have because they tapped into a place inside themselves that's different than the workaday world.
Does anyone ever say, you know what? I don't think I need my psychiatric drugs.
I wish someone would tell me that. I do.
Well, if they do, you tell them that they have to come off the drugs slowly and carefully, hopefully with experienced clinical supervision. But I can imagine somebody doing that and realizing that they've got all these feelings that have been dammed up and being discouraged. That's Grace, true. We're going to go to a break in a few minutes. So let me say a few words, and then we'll come back to you after the break.
Okay.
You're listening to Grace Sweet, spelled just like it sounds. And she's just a lovely guest, and I think you can find her on averagemiracles.com.
Sure.
And we'll go to break.
You are listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Eric Davis, host of Expanding Mind. Join me and co-host Maja Daou each week as we explore the culture of consciousness, spirituality, neuroscience, media tech, and all manner of wonders and esoterica. Expanding Mind streams every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Keep your mind open.
South of the border.
Hello, I'm Johnny Mueller, and I have a brand new show called The Expat Files, and it's all about living, working, playing, or retiring in Latin America. I know what it's like to buy land, build a house, start a business. I've been through it in a dozen Latin countries. So, if you're thinking about moving down or you're just curious, be sure to listen in Mondays and Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Down Mexico way.
The Progressive Radio Network is looking to expand its programming, and we are looking for your ideas. If there's a subject that you are passionate about and we don't cover it, let us know. Give us a call at 646-307-4482 or email our program director, Carolee@GaryNoll.com. That's Carolee@GaryNoll.com. The Progressive Radio Network, the number one forum for progressive minds.
Freedom News Hour will bring you up to date on the latest news on the financial meltdown.
Begin restoring local communities. It can happen.
We'll be exploring the issues from a freedom-oriented, small government perspective.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster.
I am Jake Towne.
Join us live Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm
pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one forum that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
You have been listening to a progressive moment on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour. My guest, Grace Sweet, her website, averagemiracles.org. Averagemiracles.org. I've been sitting here during the break thinking about what it would be like for a little child going to an ordinary psychiatrist versus going to a therapist trained in part by Grace Sweet. So let's say this little boy, maybe he's 5 or 6, 7, 10, and he's been told he's got all kinds of disorders, and he's maybe even on Ritalin, which would make him very serious looking. Hard to laugh on Ritalin. Takes away your spontaneity. And this little boy comes in, and maybe the parents are there, and the therapist talks and does the usual stuff, and he's a professional, she's a professional, and then says, "I want to try something with you, Timmy. I want to do some laughing with you." And maybe he's skilled, or she's skilled. Grace has taught this therapist. And for 5 minutes, as this little boy gets confident, or this little girl gets confident, begins laughing with mom and dad, and laughing with the therapist, and just letting emotions out, and mom and dad get to see this little child's feelings again, and what was missing and what's been suppressed, and maybe they could get a new lease on life, and then go on with some good family therapy and help that family learn to raise a kid without drugging them. I just had this vision. And then there's that awful, sad contrast. The little boy comes in, 10 minutes, the parents are told he has ADHD, and if he's on meds, it's increased. Well, something new is tried. And the little boy gets sadder and sadder and leaves feeling very sad. Now, I've always believed deeply that the issues that we face in the field of psychiatry and psychology and social work and mental health are not a contest between biological psychiatry and standard psychotherapy. Now, I do psychotherapy, and as I mentioned to you, we put a lot of work into guidelines for empathic therapy that's going to be going up on empathictherapy.org. And again, reminding you that time's winding down to sign up for our conference on empathictherapy.org. I practice psychotherapy. I'm a psychiatrist who does therapy. I work with families. I work with kids. I work with couples. I work with individuals. But the struggle here isn't between doing therapy or having shock treatment, being drugged, going to a mental hospital, and all those things that happen in biological psychiatry, being locked up against your will. The contest is between biological psychiatry, which dominates the field, and all of life, all the good things in life. Therapy is a part of that, good therapy, family life, love, spirituality, religion when it's liberating, yoga, chiropractic, yeah, even chiropractic, done within its scope and limits, Eastern medicine. It's about all of life. All of life is the answer to labeling yourself with some ugly term like clinical depression or bipolar disorder or calling your kid ADHD and going the psychiatric route. All of life is the answer. And Grace Sweet and Yoga Laughter is sure a part of all of life. And so, Grace, let me bring you back online. You have any thoughts just dying to share right now?
Well, you described very well what happens with the therapist and the child. That's exactly what the leaders that I've trained are doing. And a lot of them already are peers themselves, are clients, mental health clients themselves, in recovery called peer specialists or family advocate, peer family advocates. And they run groups, or they work with children as therapists and adults. But with the children, that's exactly what they do. You described it.
I just imagined it. Now, because I play with kids in a very, in a way that I want to liberate them and help them just get free and become more themselves. I don't sit back and watch them draw and not, or something. I really get involved with them with play when I play with them. I'm not a play therapist, so I just play with them.
Yeah.
But with the ends in mind of relationship and moral lessons and loosening themselves up. Now, can people find out about this peer program on averagemiracles.org?
Oh, yes. Everything is there. Everything is there that I've done. All the conferences I've attended, everything I teach, I should say profess. I don't really teach people to laugh. They already know how to laugh. I just leave them to secrets about it they didn't realize.
Now, tell me about the peer programs, because one of the things that my wife and I and many of my colleagues the Center for the Study of Empathic Therapy, what many of us are concerned about is how can we begin to train people who don't necessarily have big degrees and who aren't necessarily young and starting out but could be entering the field at any age, maybe after their kids are growing up or they've retired. We're really interested in how can we begin training folks to do caring, empathic, respectful therapy. And you seem to be somewhat involved in that process. Can you say more about that?
That's exactly my aim. That is exactly my effort. I feel that the mental health system can be transformed not by starting with the most hurt clients, but at the top with the staff, the therapists, the caregivers of all types, administration, everybody. If where the mental health client goes to get help, if they are in a better state of mind and their heart is in the right place, just that's what you profess, then I think better care will be given and empathy will happen.
I'm so with you. One of the guidelines for empathic therapy is we bring out the best in ourselves in order to bring out the best in others.
Yes.
And I think it sounds like you're doing that.
That's what I'm good. Yeah. I'm trying. That's what I'm aiming at, my goal.
It's fun to talk with you because I really didn't know a thing about you hardly when you came on. My wife was just, Ginger, was just inspired by your website and communicating with you. And I've known probably almost the least about you of anyone I brought on the show, but it just looked good to me, and I think it sounds like you're making a real contribution. Now, are some of the people that you're working with, they are already trained therapists, so they're including laughter therapy, laughter, yoga, into other kind of counseling? Is that fair, or is that happening?
Into their practice. Either it's inside the mental health system or it's outside. I shouldn't say the system. Either they're working in a behavioral health facility or they're in for-profit or not-for-profit agency outside the behavioral health facility. But yes, I am. I definitely am. And they are incorporating it either with groups they run or one-to-one as a coach.
And you call it a coach when you're teaching, when you're doing the laughter.
Yes.
Is
one to one, face to face.
Some people are just laughter therapists. What would you call them? And don't do anything else but just work in that framework. That's
not
a question.
The ones
some
I
people
teach.
Just
they
working in the framework
health.
Of laughter yoga.
They use laughter yoga as one intervention.
I like that. Because
yeah.
That's what I think it probably should be, although I could see just doing laughter groups and trying to reach a better state of mind and a better in touchness with yourself and your energy in itself would be helpful. But it might, you know, for people who are deeply struggling, it might be more a part of a therapy.
Yeah.
The main reason I wouldn't want to see it used with people who were more disturbed. You said, you know, that they need to be more grounded, and that makes sense to me. And I think it could seem to belittle or humiliate somebody who didn't have a strong ego. This sounds to me like this is great for those of us with these giant egos, and we need to knock it off some and let it go and blow it away and laugh it away. But for somebody who's struggling for identity and is really frightened and doesn't know the difference between real and unreal, I think they might feel humiliated and frightened by being asked to just start laughing spontaneously. It might seem like one more humiliation. Does that make sense to you, Grace?
Well, there's a couple of things there. It is a matter of trust, either in a group or with an individual in a coaching situation. So the therapist can gauge where the client is at in terms of how trusting they can be and how strong or weak their ego is. The ones that have too strong an ego won't work at all. That's too much affection, no trust. It has to be a balance of trust. So it can build self-esteem. It can do a lot for social skills. It's wonderful for physical problems. People have claimed all kinds of health problems have gone away from high blood pressure to heart disease. I mean, really. And matter of fact, one of my leaders in San Bernardino, California, told me on the phone that one of his groups, he has a man who was improperly using laughter. He was using laughter in inappropriate ways, like intimidation and this sort of thing. And since he's been working with David, is his name, he's laughing. His joy is coming out. He's being real now. He's not being inappropriate anymore. So it can change people. That's just one small example, but it definitely changes people. It's been called life-changing.
And is the life changing mostly around the yoga laughter itself or as a part of something else? I keep wanting to understand where it fits in the context. I think our listeners will want to know that. Is it mostly this kind of change you saw? Was that mostly simply yoga laughter or was it yoga laughter in a context of therapy?
Just simply laughter yoga. It's actually called laughter yoga.
Laughter yoga.
What happens when you, there's something about the movement of the diaphragm and mirthful laughter. It's connected with the nervous system, as I said, and that is connected to the endocrine system, which releases all kinds of good chemistry into the blood and thus to the brain, and actually the neurosynaptic synapses in the brain start to actually change patterns if you do this repetitively. And this is one of the part of the science that is part of my workshop and training that I teach the clinicians about why people change because of laughter.
Well, I think it's ultimately spiritual. I think that laughter is such a human quality. I think chimpanzees laugh a little bit. They smile and stuff, but human beings are really the animals that laugh. And laughter is a very, very high-level spiritual activity. It's a getting perspective. It's a letting go of pain and suffering. So often laughter has a lot to do with pain and suffering. So I think it's a really high-level spiritual release kind of experiences. And when you do that, you're going to get huge changes in the body. I think anything you measure is going to change when you go from being slow and sluggish and not very in touch with yourself and mired down in self-pity, and all of a sudden instead you're laughing. It's almost like the opposite of victimization. I'm sort of enjoying just thinking about this. What do you think, Grace?
You're absolutely right, Dr. Brennan. your perception is very, very accurate. Laughter is very connected to our instinctual brain. And if we can get into that, all sorts of wonderful things will begin to transpire. You know, people instinctively want to laugh. And I often tell people that this is the reason in offices they gather around the water cooler and gossip so that they can laugh at others, because they need to laugh so badly they'll do anything.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think some of the patients or clients I've worked with who have had the most difficulty have been unable to laugh. They've been just wrapped around their own issues and so imploded. Oh, you know what it is? I'm getting all these metaphors talking to you, Grace. It's like we get imploded by our issues, and laughter is like an explosion. It's a reversal of the implosion. It's like, boom, a bursting out, a bursting free. It just makes so much sense to me metaphorically and spiritually. And, of course, that is going to affect our physiology. I don't think there'd be any question about that.
Yeah.
Tell us more. We're going to be getting near the end. We got about 10 minutes.
Okay.
Anything that by the way, I didn't expect to enjoy this so much. I mean, it's really good. My wife, meanwhile, has come in and looked at me and given me the signal that I am so right on that you're not going to do laughter on the radio.
God, yeah, how about it? Let's give it a try. I got you.
No, not going to do it. But listen, you'll have to come to a workshop in Syracuse. I'm a psychiatric consultant to a clinic that would probably love to have you come. And I want to know why you're not coming to our conference. Maybe we could talk about that. We are full. We are full to the gills. But if you'd be willing to do a non-plenary, you know, a workshop, I mean, we could probably find something. We'll talk about that later privately. It would be fun to see you work and to do stuff with you. In the last moments that we're going to have, we still about 10 minutes. Talk about stuff you want to talk about. I've been guiding this a lot, bringing out things. Just talk about maybe what's been left out.
What's been left out? Well, positive experiences heal. I keep saying that over and over and over again, and laughter is one of the most positive experiences that we can have. I could talk about the laughter study that was done at a behavioral health facility in Kansas.
Sure. We'll be a little scientific.
This was done in 2006 and published in the Journal of Primary Prevention in 2007, and they used a mean scale of scoring, and the findings were enormously positive. They found that work, and they did it in three areas: relational efficacy, personal efficacy, and role efficacy. And the relational efficacy, therapists didn't excel because they already excel in relational efficacy. They love people, and that's why they do the work they do, and they want to help. But in role efficacy and personal efficacy, they did. Especially in role efficacy, they improved in their jobs to the extent where they became an asset to their employees in this study, which is only 15 minutes a day. 15 minutes a day for 15 days. This was the extent of the study. It was employees on all levels, therapists all the way down to the janitor. And so that's really encouraging, and information about that can be found on my website as well. It's really encouraging for agencies to take a look at. There are enormous benefits to inviting laughter into your programs. Gosh, there's so many. I don't have a list in my head, but I can tell you
how much research has been done in this area, in the sense of, you know, scientific studies, publications. I mean, it's such an important. By the way, you know, Freud had these terrible ideas about laughter.
Oh,
did you ever look at his stuff?
No.
As always, he degraded people, and I think Freud talked about laughter and the grin and the baring of teeth, and he talked about laughter as a way of minimizing, diminishing your enemies and all kinds of different stuff. But Freud had no notion at all of the liberation. We have a call from someone who'd like to ask about Patch Adams, and I think that's a really good thing because I was thinking about Patch Adams. So let's bring in Robert from San Francisco about Patch Adams.
Hey there. I'm enjoying this, and I seldom miss any of your shows, Dr. Bregan. I think it's wonderful to have you on the air, and I'm enjoying listening today. And
Robert, we're just getting started. Tell folks about it. I'm just delighted to have this opportunity. Go ahead.
I was very fortunate at one time to actually have heard Norman Cousins talk about his book, and I've always thought about the idea that laughter can heal, and I have reservations about some of it, and some of it I believe in. I don't know the answer, but I was fascinated reading Patch Adams' book, Gesundheit, many years back. He's an interesting man who believes that healing is 50% work of the patient and 50% work of the doctor. And he incorporates laughter and actually dressing up as a clown when he visits wards of children with cancer and such forth. And I just thought I would mention him and see what you all thought about him. That's about it.
Thank you very much. Grace, have you ever met Patch? I've met him. Have you? There was a movie about him with that marvelous actor.
Robin Williams.
What was his name? Robin Williams did the movie about Patch. Do you have any thoughts, Grace, about Patch Adams?
Just a couple. I haven't had the pleasure. Actually, there's a page on my website called Pioneers of Laughter, and he's the top of the page. I just love the man's attitude. He's got it. The only thing I wanted to share is about him, or not about him specifically, but about his approach, is that he uses conditional laughter, clowning, and things that are, let's say, considered by most people to be funny. Whereas this method that I use is making the sounds of laughter for your health. Let's put it that way. And when you do it in a group, it's a whole lot more fun than when you do it alone. But doing it alone can be equally as healthful as doing it with a group, but it's more fun with a group. So Dr. Adams has definitely a different approach. He's a wonderful human being, though. And then there's Norman Cousins, and then there's also Dr. William Fry. So there are others, and a lot of research has been done on laughter,
Who's William Fry? Patch Adams says is conditional,
not unconditional. You see the difference?
Yeah, no, but who is William Fry?
A psychiatrist from Stanford University who examined the psychological effects of laughter in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. I see a great difference between your work and Patch Adams' work. I met Patch years and years ago, and I wasn't comfortable with his approach. I don't want to get into that at all, but I did meet him years ago. We talked. We admired each other's basic thrust and what each of us were trying to do. And when I say years ago, I think I mean the 70s.
Right.
Been around a while. But I really like your approach, where what you're doing is inspiring the other person to laugh in their own way and to bring the laughter out of themselves and to grow with that. It's very empowering. I am sure, to people who experiment with it. And I like your approach a lot.
Thank you.
What else would you you have any questions of me? You know, I've never asked that on the air before. I ask it all the time in therapy. I say, do you have any questions of me? Anything you want me to answer? I may or may not be willing to answer, but ask me anything. Any questions of me about what I think, Grace, or about all of this today?
Yeah. Would you reconsider doing a couple of exercises, simple ones, on the phone right now?
Nope.
Oh.
But it's okay to ask. Maybe I'll have you back. I'll have to talk my wife into it. I trust her judgment. I'm sure what she's thinking is that if I do that, it will diminish the gravitas of the program and could be taken out of context. And I kind of respect her wishes about that. She's helped me a lot in that regard. But it sounds like a wonderful thing. You want to ask me anything else?
Let's see. Well, I could talk a little bit more about the benefits.
Why don't you talk a little more about the benefits, and then we will finish up for the day. And I want to thank Robert from San Francisco for calling in. Ginger has just walked in the room, I think, to monitor the last 5 minutes to make sure I stay within the limits here. But go ahead, and I love Ginger. I hope you all can tell that.
Yeah.
She's laughing now. You'll hear barking Shelties in a minute because she left the doors open. You finish up and tell us more, Grace, and we'll be prepared to end in a few minutes. Tell us more about your work and the benefits.
Sure. Well, there's great detail on my website, and for those who are interested, but I just want to talk a little bit about how laughter, the benefits are multidimensional. So we are mind, body, spirit, psychic, all of that one thing. We are more than the sum of our parts.
Yeah.
So laughter improves the functioning not only of our physical body, you know, our immune and endocrine system,
yeah,
is enhanced, our respiration is deepened, and our circulation in our body is improved. And I don't know if you all are aware of cellular memory, but it helps to release cellular memory, maybe if it's negative, and it'll increase it if it's positive.
Grace, we're going to have to end soon. We're listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour and Grace Sweet. And her website is ordinaryaveragemiracles.org. This has been a fascinating show. Bye-bye all.
You've been listening to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Bregan and his lifelong reform work on www.bregan.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.